Previously, an unnecessary side project.
Joe collected stamps.
And Matt didn't have any hobbies.
Hi, I'm Gene Roddenberry.
And I'm Steve.
And welcome to the podcast, Unnecessary Side Project, back for another week.
We did it.
We did it, yeah. This time around, I'm happily in the captain's chair, you might say. And I thought I would steer this ship on a track towards...
I am so excited for this sentence to continue.
This button is... I'm going to beam up to this sentence and talk about science fiction, I think, for this this podcast. And I thought we would talk about is some of the shows and universes and worlds and movies that we like and ones we don't like, places we like to live, things like that. So on that note, I thought I'd ask you, Joe, in all the science fiction lore that you watch, what's your probably your favorite series or world or universe that you've seen established?
Well, if you can start the timer as well. We're going to include this. You're seeing a little behind the scenes action here.
We have a timer. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, we keep track of time. Probably Star Trek, but not original series, and not after. It's a just the Next Generation, because everything was sort of great there. Yep. Like, it, you know, there was a lot of fighting in the original series and a lot of fighting in, like, Deep Space Nine and stuff. Everything seemed pretty cool in Next Generation. Everyone was happy. Every human was, like, the pinnacle of humanity and empathy, and there was no money. It was just sort of this idealist type situation and universe. And, you know, as the seasons went on, there was more and more conflict. But sort of the beginning of Next Generation, when sort of Roddenberry was still at the helm of it, it was very like, this is what humanity should strive for. And yeah, definitely. I mean, I love that show so much.
Yeah, I think that show... I think that universe was very optimistic when you compare it to the first, I'm not going to the first generation, but the original series.
Yeah.
Because they were obviously the Cold War things going on, so they were kind of mimicking that or mirroring that. But the Next Generation, it was this nice lull in the 90s where the economy wasn't in the garbage can.
Yeah.
Technology was growing, so things were pretty exciting.
We were friends with Klingons.
They were friends with Klingons,
I mean, if we can tame the Russian beast that is the Klingons, because that's who they were supposed to be. I mean, we still fought with the Romulans, but still, it's a great time to be in the stars.
Yeah. So then, but then they add the Borg towards the end of that series. Like,
yeah.
You still want to live in that universe with the Borg?
Oh, no.
Existing?
Well, no, not really. I mean, the Borg are terrifying.
Yeah.
But
I think Q is as terrifying. He's so omnipotent.
He's just a scamp.
Yeah.
He's just out there to have, I mean, the whole idea is that series never really happened and everything was being controlled by Q and it was all one big long, that's one of the theories.
Yeah.
Is that everything was one big long set of tests by Q to determine if humanity was ready to enter the outer universe or farther than they've ever been.
So like the next level, like the Prime Directive, so...
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's established that they can only go so far with their current technology and only know about like certain areas of the universe, and like the Borg came from outside of that reach. Like there was an episode where I was just gonna just talk about Next Generation's whole episode. There was an episode where Q is messing with them and throws them farther away than humanity has ever been, and that's where they first encounter the Borg. And once the Borg encounters humanity, it starts plotting a course towards Earth and towards the Federation. And that's what sort of started. So Q really screwed him over in that respect.
But that'd be your number one universe to actually live in. Like, if you could wake up tomorrow, if you're walking in a hallway, let's say a metaphorical hallway.
Yeah.
You could walk through a doorway and, like, suddenly you've been transported to that world or that universe.
Well,
you want to be in that one?
It depends on what you were doing. Because, I mean, if you're on Earth, I don't know if there's a whole lot of great things going on. It's just kind of everything's shinier.
You're in Starfleet, but you're wearing a red shirt.
Right. Well, hey, that means in Next Generation, that means, well, I guess the ensigns also wore red, but I could be a commander.
There you go.
A commanding officer. So that's good. I could be William T. Riker.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know. I think Next Generation was interesting to me. as a universe goes, because some of it was so human, like exploring, just like the first series was,
yeah,
and discovering civilizations, kind of troubleshooting the problems they find there. But then you add Q, the Borg, and then was it Guinan? Is that Whoopi Goldberg's character?
Yes, Guinan.
And I can't remember Diana Troy and other kinds of like
Deanna.
Sorry,
going back a couple podcasts, we called James Naismith Joe Naismith.
Oh, okay.
And we were corrected by that. So
I think that extra level of sort of omnipotence with Q, or the kind of psychoanalysis, or whatever you want to call it. Can't think of the word when you can.
For the Borg?
No, for Troy.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's an empath.
Everett so empath, yeah.
Yeah.
That seemed like a little bit wishy-washy. Like, she didn't seem to really be totally relevant all the time.
Yeah, well, it's because she was a product of two worlds, because she was half. I can't remember the name of the race that she was in, but she was only half, so that's why she was only an empath, whereas her mother, which was a pole, the race that I can't remember,
yeah,
she could, like, control people's thoughts and read people's minds and stuff. So it's just because she was sort of a halfling.
My point was that there's sort of this level of almost, like, supernatural still going on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of scares me, and that's what I don't like about a lot of other sci-fi worlds.
Yeah.
I almost like the surety of ones that are just kind of like an apocalyptic wasteland, because at least you know what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I guess. So like a Terminator
situation. Yeah, so my next question is, like, what scientific or sci-fi universe would you least want to live in? Not like the one which is the worst movie, because I'm sure there's crappy movies out there, but like, which one would you not want to live in the most?
Yeah, that's a very
good question. Like, you could go to the Matrix, where you could live in a paradise.
Right.
But it's all fake, and then you might end up in, you know, not living in that paradise, yeah, and never recycled.
You might not be enjoying steak anymore.
Yeah.
There's a big plot point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Or you could be in like a post-apocalyptic, you know, water world scenario or Terminator scenario. But what you like, drinking your own pee, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it made it into drinking water, so yeah, whatever. If you can desalinize it and you can make it drinkable, then who cares? It's probably be for the good of humanity if we could take our pee and make it as drinkable.
True. You gotta start somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna finish that thought. Probably the worst. I mean, like, any of the sort of like dystopian type.
Like The Road and those kinds of.
Yeah, movies, or like V for Vendetta Future?
No.
No.
It was like a parallel history. Okay. Yeah, timeline.
Maybe like Blade Runner, like where everything is like you're just essentially living in like Kowloon Wall City, where it's just skyscrapers blocking out the sun, and it's just dark and there's neon everywhere. Just the idea that everything gets so much worse, humanity just, which, hey, we're pretty much going down that
path. Yeah.
It's not going to get much better, I don't think.
Of all the different universes, like Star Trek is a nice one. I think my favorite, or what I find interesting to make me live in, would be like Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
Which I know is not supposed to be the most well-developed scientific world. It was kind of like the whole movie was supposed to be not a parody, but a satire of a lot of other things. I get that. But I still think it's cool. I think like citizenship has its benefits, and you join the military and they completely invent a war against these alien bugs and stuff.
Yeah, why not?
But then, you know, I think about it. Neil Patrick Harris has... Yeah, he's there, which makes everything better.
Mm-hmm.
I like that universe for some reason. I don't know. There's still equality, like women and men fight together and everything else.
Shower together.
That's kind of what I want to say.
Well.
But I think like that there's still, I guess, same level of equality there. Although that being said, I think Star Trek has a leg up on it a bit, because they have like the holodeck for one thing.
Right.
And they have the ability to just make their food whenever they feel like it of any kind.
This is true.
So in that note, what kind of future tech, like, some probably not realistic technology that is somewhere off in the distant future, do you think from these sci-fi shows is the most exciting or most interesting, or you definitely most want to have?
So something that's within these shows that I hope we get?
The one that you'd want the most, but does not stay realistic.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of them are pretty much based on faster-than-light travel, which is so cool. Like, the idea of essentially just being able to jump across the galaxy in a matter of seconds. So, like, in Star Wars with the hyperdrive, and, you know, with the warp drive in Star Trek, and that's cool. But, again, as a normal human, I don't think that's going to help. You're not really going to be affected by that much other than people you know. Like, if you're not interested in going into Starfleet or going into the military, it's really probably not going to help you at all. Probably the replicator in Star Trek, the ability to just grab matter and move things around. And same with the transporter.
Oh, yeah, transporter.
Yeah, the transporter. So, like, just the ability to move distances instantaneously, and, you know, as you transport, it checks your body for any foreign contaminants and that kind of stuff and just takes it right out of you. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's...
What do you think is preventing us from having a transporter? I think the big oil lobby is just holding down the transporter and just...
Yeah. is this going to be another conspiracy theory? Yeah. Well...
No, I'm just joking. I've seen The Fly. I know what happens when you build a transporter.
Exactly. And the thing with transporters is essentially it is taking you, grabbing all of the information about you, and your DNA and your molecular structure and everything, and then recreating you somewhere else, but your original self is being destroyed. And a lot of people, even though supposedly you'd retain all your own memories or whatever, you're essentially just doing an instantaneous clone of yourself. So I think a lot of people are kind of weirded out by that.
Yeah, what's that magic movie, or movie about magic, or a magician?
Magic Mike?
Magic Mike. Yeah. there's a movie where that happens, where he clones himself every time to Prestige or something like that.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
But I David Bowie's in that movie as Nikola Tesla.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. here's one thing I think Star Trek got wrong. So everyone always talks about all these... the ability Star Trek's had to predict things like, you know, things from cell phones to iPads.
Yeah. William Shatner hosted a whole special event.
Yeah. I think the holodeck is actually, they kind of looked at it backwards, because you look at the Oculus Rift now and other kinds of virtual reality things. The holodeck puts the people in the room, and the room is projected out. But I think it's much more realistic. We're going to be tapping into our brains, much more like a Matrix-style world.
Right.
We're right into our... neurons, rather than, so when you're walking around, it'd all be in your brain. You wouldn't be doing anything in real life.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, but you have to agree that going into a room and then everything becomes a place that you want it to be is way cooler. Like just like in the Matrix, laying down in a chair and getting a big needle through the back of your head.
That's
true. Then you're in a new place. That's terrifying. Yeah. I don't want a needle in my head.
But he learns jujitsu. That's amazing.
It's true. He did download all those sweet moves.
I wonder. Like, I never understood the holodeck in terms of, like, they go on there and they're just riding horses through, like, huge landscapes. And I never really understood how that happened. Like, how they can interact with things that had material substance to them.
Well, it's a combination of hard light. So that it's just, like, what you're not interacting with is essentially just, like, an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do interact with it, I'm probably getting this wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure the science fact checkers can understand how the holodeck really works.
Excuse me. The squares are 1 meter by 1 meter, not 0.9. A lot of it is actually using the transporters to bring in actual matter. So a lot of the stuff is actually real in there, supposedly. In this universe. If you get too close to a wall, essentially the room makes it seem like you're going places, but you're pretty much just staying in the center of the room the whole time.
Oh, okay. So one thing we haven't talked about is Star Wars.
Yeah, I think the fact that we haven't touched on that, I think, leads us to believe that nothing in that movie is something we want.
Yeah, it seems like the coolest in some ways, because there's, like, superpowers if you're a Jedi.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's cool fights. But it also seems just like a terrifying hell.
Yeah.
Where, like, this evil empire, well, depending on who would side draw it,
I
assume that we're not in favor of the Empire, but...
Well, I think, have you seen Clerks?
I have seen Clerks. That's a hilarious thing.
Yeah, the whole diatribe about how the Rebel Alliance is really the awful people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when they blew up the Death Star the first time, it was all bad people in there. But the second time, it was still under construction. So they essentially just blew up a building with a bunch of contractors.
Which makes perfect sense. I mean, I think but that place, some guys have magic superpowers. And then the bad guys have equal or greater than magic superpowers.
Yes.
That just seems terrifying. And then they also just have... Like, they have swords that cut through everything at all times.
Yeah, I wish every weapon, when it cut you, cauterized the wound so that you wouldn't bleed.
Yeah.
You cut off my hand, whatever, as long as there's no mess, that's fine. Then you put me in one of those back tanks, big white liquid, put me in there, and then put a little robot hand on me. I'll be fine.
I think that universe is one of the ones that... Like, I think Star Trek is an example where I think Roddenberry had a pretty clear idea of what he wanted to do. Like, what would happen to humanity in the future when we've developed light, the ability to travel beyond the speed of light, and we're interacting with new species, and what would that look like? And it was kind of a metaphor for the things we're talking about in politics at the time. Star Wars seems a lot less planned, and I think a lot of it was brought in after the fact. So let's explain what the Force is, because...
Well, yeah, that's... I mean, you're talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3 now, which was just... just a terrible, terrible set of movies. Just, I mean, you have this, the Force, which is so magical and interesting, and only certain people are able to, and the Force is everywhere around you. And then literally one of the first things you do in the brand new trilogy is say, oh, it's just some particle, the midichlorians that you have in your blood, and people who have more. So you're telling me that if I went up to a Jedi and, you know, took a blood sample and put it in my arm, I can control the Force better? Like, it's just, it's terrible.
Yeah, I think they tried to make the universe make a lot more sense than it probably did. I think they could have just easily stayed, not even with the first three movies. I mean, the first maybe two movies, I think, probably could have done it, or I don't know.
So
if it's a galaxy far, far away, a time long ago, how are there human beings there? Did they ever address that question?
They're not really humans then, in that. Like, they just happen to be human.
Hey, Harrison Ford is all man.
man by the definition of that sector of the universe. That's what, they're humanoid. So, I mean, technically they're all aliens. They're all atrocities against God.
That makes sense.
I was reading online and someone said that, why did Chewbacca never say, hey, you know, like, why was he surprised when he saw Darth Vader for the first time or anything when... Or, like, hey, I know that's Anakin. Like, he... No, like, Chewbacca and Han Solo can talk to each other.
Yeah.
Chewbacca, in the first three movies, is established that he knows who Anakin Skywalker is.
Oh, yeah.
then he becomes Darth Vader. And so, like, why was... I don't know.
Yeah, but you see, you understand why Obi-Wan never tells anybody... Like, it's the same logic. Why don't R2-D2 and C-3PO tell him?
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, it's your dad. Spoiler.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I was present when you were sent to another planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're pretty much the heroes of the whole movies, I guess, because they're there for every important battle.
It's true.
They usually have some weird linchpin moment where if it wasn't for their presence, they wouldn't get there.
I remember sitting in the theater, and then when R2-D2 showed that he had a little rocket launcher, not a rocket launcher, a jetpack in his little shell, and he could fly. That just made the whole movie for us. Like, we can just stop it right here. That's all I needed to see.
Yeah, I think all that, like, why do you have to have a R2-D2 in the back of the fire jet, all that kind of stuff. That's not really well thought out. It's just what things can make sense. Like, he's driving on the fuselage of the X-Fighter, like, fixing it. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
He's like the onboard computer. It's swapping out a hard drive on a computer. Except you could take the hard drive out, and then it's your friend outside.
Yeah.
Little man. Little tidy R2-D2.
So what little piece of technology? So, like, a holodeck or traveling at light speed or whatever. Those things are kind of big things.
Yeah.
What little thing do you notice in these kind of worlds that are pretty cool?
The idea of, like, a universal translator. That seems to be a common thing in a lot of different movies. Either having something implanted in your head so that you can understand in your own native language, or something external so that as it's happening, you have the ability to understand that. And we're kind of getting there with human languages. Obviously, we have not encountered an alien that we know of that has spoken to us. But, you know, they have the thing on your smartphone now where you can hold it up, and if it's a sign in a different language, it'll overlay the picture with what the words mean in English. So, if you're in, like, Portugal and you approach a sign, it's like, what does this mean? And it says, you know, like, bridge out or something.
It's red. This red octagon means stop. I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. The Portuguese have such interesting choices for the signs.
That one actually seems pretty realistic. I wonder what's more realistic, that we progress to a point where we all speak one language, whether it's English or Mandarin or something like that, or a universal translator comes and breaks those barriers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think... Even within the same language, like, dialect is so regional that, you know, if you speak to someone from Newfoundland, they sound completely different from someone in Southern Ontario and someone in BC. So it's even if you are technically speaking the same language, and I mean, Canadian English, American English, British English, they all have their own subtleties. I mean, like, we have nothing like rhyming slang or anything, and that's a whole Cockney British thing that, you know, if someone told me that I'm going to apples and pears, I would assume they're going to a store. But if it's in England, that means they're going upstairs. Like, it's just...
Oh, really?
It's, yeah. That's like, weird. It's because stairs rhymes with pears, and then they take out the word and then add another word. So it's apples and pears.
That's weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, even if we had a unified language across the board, we're still going to have difficulty understanding each other.
Told to our legions of British fans, please stop complicating our universal
trade. Yeah, if you could just cut it out with your crazy rhyming slang and your whistling in public, that means you're going to pickpocket someone. So I just want to whistle in a mall.
Yeah,
but
every day.
You ruined it for us.
So what do you think is more realistic, that the humanity evolves to a point, or we develop to a point where we're launching our first starship and we're going for Alpha Centauri, or we blow ourselves up in some terrible post-apocalyptic world, or the robots come after us, like in Terminator?
I think it's as humanity, a lot of us are very short-sighted, and that's sort of a shortfall of being a human. It's like you look out for yourself on sort of a minute-to-minute basis, and you're not really thinking about the long run. And it's always the people that can see, you know, 100 years in the future, 500 years in the future, or even just, you know, 10 years in the future, that are able to put things in motion that progress humanity. And I feel like even though everything seems super dire right now with, you know, with the melting of the ice caps and with CO2 in the atmosphere and everything, we just finished watching Cosmos, so it's just really not a really good feeling coming out of that. But there's always someone or some group of people every generation that, you know, is able to better humanity. Like, every generation is objectively better off than the previous one, even though, you know, now they're saying we're not making as much as our parents, but it might not, we might not be looking at betterment of life in a monetary sense anymore. It's, you know, like the access to information that our generation has that baby boomers have, but maybe do not understand or have not grown up in, like that's better humanity for sure. So I forgot.
Well,
I forgot the point about the
likelihood of us being some kind of post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah,
like
I think
utopian kind of.
I think there will always be someone who will step in and will, you know, go a little further. I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that have to happen on Earth before we start heading out to the stars, because, you know, like the whole first space race was basically just showing we have better rockets between the Soviet Union and the US, and there's not really that kind of a thing anymore. Like, there's so many nukes that it's like, okay, we get it, you know, you could destroy everyone, it's fine, like you're not really, you don't need to show it off as much anymore. It's just knowing you have it, it's a deterrent. So I think that, you know, like, progresses in technology and, you know, moving away from fossil fuels. Like, I think there's a lot of people, like, is it Elon Musk that's behind Tesla?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I might be pronouncing his name wrong, but, like, that's, like, he's doing so much. He's behind SpaceX as well, which is sort of privatizing the space industry, which I think makes more sense. Like, rather than having it government-funded, having it sort of a private industry, and, you know, if you can prove that you can do it, in a cost-effective way, I think that makes more sense. Not that I hate NASA or anything like that. I'd love to see NASA make a ton of money and do cool stuff, but I think it makes more sense to be privatized.
I'm torn between which we were going, because I think we look back at some of the great achievements of humanity, like the pyramids, for example, right?
Right.
And I know there's debate about whether that was built by slaves or by people.
Humans.
Yeah. By humans, yes. Conspiracy theory.
Yeah, okay.
Full circle. No, there's whether it's built by slaves or built by people who they did it as part of their yearly work, and it wasn't really slavery. But anyway, my point is, like, all the kind of great achievements that humanity points to came at a huge cost, right?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times I hear discussions about we're going to innovate our ways out of it, but I wonder, like, how bad it will get. Because I think, like, that post-apocalyptic world that we're scared of entering, a lot of people already kind of live there in other parts of the world. And I wonder if, like, 200 years from now, they're going to say, oh, wow, it's great we have all this cool stuff now, but all those people who are starving had to pay the price.
Right.
Fiji sinks into the ocean, which they came out today with a press release saying they're blaming the world because as the ocean levels rise, they're going to be swallowed by the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, how many people are going to pay that price? I don't know. But what makes me optimistic is that I think all the damage we're doing and things like that. I think you're right. I think people, humanity seems to have a knack for staying alive and innovating.
Yeah.
If we can kind of do a dry run, terraforming Earth back into a hospitable place in like 1,000 years.
Right. A Genesis project, if
yeah.
you will.
Yeah. That's exactly what we could use to go terraform Mars or whatever, yeah. Venus, if they have, we were running a greenhouse effect here, we could do it there or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that's my optimistic side, is if we figure it out here, we can figure it out in other places.
Yeah, I think assuming we don't blow ourselves up, humanity is not meant to stay exclusively on Earth. I think there's going to be stuff on the moon. There's probably going to be stuff on Mars. I mean, they're already saying there's that one way ticket to get out to Mars, but that might be a huge scam. I don't know. but yeah, it's, yeah, I think, the future is bright. It's just difficult to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, like you go back 100 years and the stuff that if we told about all the good stuff we had right now to someone from, what is 100 years, 1914, what the stuff we have, they would be, you know, they'd be blown away. It's,
yeah.
Oh, it must be so much better, but it's just, you get a new set of problems every generation, every.
And that, I mean, talk to kind of bring it full circle, I guess that's ultimately what a lot of the movies and TV shows are trying to do. Just like Fantasy does, that could be a whole other podcast, but
yeah.
All these utopian places, they nevertheless still face very much the same challenges that we experience here.
Yeah.
Resources and things like that. I don't know.
Have you ever seen the Inner Light episode of Next Generation?
I don't remember names of these.
So essentially, this little probe shows up in front of the Enterprise. I'm going to spoil. If you haven't seen the Inner Light and you want to, turn off the podcast now or just turn it down. But a probe appears in front of the Enterprise and it shoots like a beam at Picard and he faints. And then he wakes up and he's on another planet and everybody's saying, oh no, and he's like, I need to get back to my ship. And they're like, oh, what are you talking about? You're not from a ship. You're this person. And he spends an entire lifetime on this planet and he eventually comes to terms with the fact that maybe I was never a captain. This is my planet. But the planet is dying essentially. Like they're running out of water and like the star near them is expanding and it's drying up the planet essentially. So he's trying to fix that. And the end of the episode, you know, all the things that he's put into place have not been able to work. He's an old man and they send off a probe, with all the information about that society. And then, you know, he's greeted by the people he saw at the beginning of the episode saying, you know, we chose you because we don't want our society and we don't want our world to be all for naught. We want to tell our story. So they essentially made him live a lifetime on the planet so that he can pass it forward.
Oh, wow.
And so that he wakes up from this coma and he's back on the Enterprise and like no time has passed.
Yeah.
But he has that memory in his head and it's like, it's a really powerful episode. That's cool. It's kind of cheesy, you know, because it's, oh, you know, he lived another life and it's very sad. And he learns how to play this little tiny flute his entire life. And then when he wakes up, he has the beam put in his pocket or something. So that comes back a few times in the movies and in a couple other episodes, he's playing the flute. And it's a very personal experience for him because he lived this whole life.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, like that's an exceptional episode. And that's, even if humanity is destroyed and we blow each other up and everything, I think our probe is Voyager. And someone is going to find that little golden disc and know about humanity. Like, it's already out of the solar system. Eventually, it's going to get somewhere. Hopefully, someone picks it up.
Yeah. A long enough timeline, I think a lot of that stuff, all the information that's been sent into space, something has to come back.
Yeah.
Which, we're kind of running out of time here, but I have a question, actually. I just forgot. How does the Prime Directive work with planets like ours that are actively searching for signals in space? Are you supposed to kind of steer clear of those planets so that you don't reveal yourself?
So, the Prime Directive states that you cannot interfere with the workings of a pre-warp civilization.
Yeah.
So even though humanity might be ready to talk to a race out, an alien race or something, we're not allowed. They're not allowed to interfere.
Yeah.
And if you've advanced technologically enough that you have warp technology, you're probably able to avoid radio waves or
yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
That makes sense. Although every episode of Star Trek is them just taking the Prime Directive and throwing it in the garbage, pretty much. They're in some mountain and they have a hologram up to make sure that no one can see them because they're observing, and then the hologram craps out, and then some, you know, tribe of natives on this planet find out that there's space people, and then they got to figure out what we got to do. These people have this knowledge.
Kill these.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. So they just torch the planet, and then they move on.
Yeah, they send a probe out, and then hopefully someone gets flash with that probe to remember all the memories of that planet.
A probe with a little flute inside.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't know, it brings us full circle, I think, with a little sci-fi discussion. I think we can talk about this for a lot longer in different areas, but I just wanted to kind of get us introduced to the sci-fi world that we both seem to enjoy a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... If you look at science fiction at face value, it is crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's insane, and it doesn't make sense. And, you know, saying that this is where we're going to be in the future, almost it always is wrong.
Yeah.
But using it as sort of an allegory to try and teach people lessons, which pretty much all of them are, like, it's some either retelling a story from history, or, you know, talking about the political climate, or, you know, showing how as humanity we can band together, or something like that. If you look past the surface and the goofy makeup and, you know, the aliens that look like fish, you know, there's a lot there. And I think a lot of people don't give it a chance, but there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah, I agree. I think.
All right. Well, it's been a great episode.
Yeah, well, I think the same way, whenever we talk about science fiction or fantasy, like Game of Thrones with my girlfriend, I see your eyes glass over, and I'm like, just give me, like, two more minutes to explain this.
Yeah.
I definitely think there's out there. And besides...
You're learning about the War of the Roses.
Yeah, there might even...
Game of Thrones.
I saw that post already, too.
there might be a universe where there's women with three breasts, as we saw the documentary.
They're on Mars. Arnold's heading there.
Yeah, well, that wraps it up for this episode of A Necessary Side Project. Thanks again, Joe. Hopefully you enjoyed yourself.
I did. It was a great chatting with you.
Awesome. And we'll see everybody else next time. Or you'll hear us next time. See you later.
Thank you for your patronage. We will see you next week.